A godly marriage should become more effective in pleasing the Lord by serving the Lord. You're a teen now. Do not let your marriage hold you back because time is short from God's work. Paul is saying again, don't let your marriage hold you back from the work that God has for you.
Today on Seeds of Camilla Lance Cook with continuous studies in 1 Corinthians 7 as we've been learning about marital issues. Today we'll be examining verses 29 through 40 where the Apostle Paul here is teaching and urging believers to live expecting the second coming. He realizes that the business of life is to prepare for a home in God's kingdom. The Christian should always be ready to meet God and will not set their affections on earthly things. But when we do get married, there are those earthly distractions. And that is the outline of our lesson. And now with the details, here's Lance on today's broadcast of Seeds of Commitment.
This is going to conclude our chapter 7 studies, where Paul the Apostle, the founding pastor, hearing concerning news about the church he had founded there in Corinth, would respond through the inspiration of the Holy Spirit. And in chapter 7, at that portion, that point, that place in the letter, he would begin to deal with misconceptions and misbehavior in regards to marriage, singleness, celibacy. Verses 1 through 7, again, he establishes the general principle that in God's eyes, marriage is, it's the norm. It's the normal choice for Christians. Singleness, of course, is also an opportunity, and that should be seen as a gift from God, whether it's a short season or if it's for life. It is a gift from God. And then as he begins to elaborate upon his point of marriage being good, as seeing it as norm in God's eyes, he begins to address and apply that basic truth to four groups. We hit them last Sunday morning. Those who were formerly married in verses 8 and 9. In verses 10 through 11, those who are married to believers. Verses 12 through 13, those who are married to unbelievers and who want to remain married. And then in verses 14 through 16, those who are married to unbelievers who actually would want out of the marriage. The unbeliever wants out of the marriage. Then in our last study on Wednesday night, we went through verses 17 to 27. And there Paul was basically saying, hey, learn to be content in the place that you are. Paul began to deal with social behavior and social responsibility. As we said, the church, Christianity, it was somewhat new. People had come from so many different backgrounds, so many different lifestyles. If we were single, and now, you know, society, of course, was saying that, you know, you need to get married. That's the pressure of society. And the age of society was, you know, maybe in the mid-20s, and I'm pushing for that, I'm pushing for that. What's God's will? Paul would say to that single person, be content in the state in which you are. If you're saved as a single person, just relax, be content. The married people as well. All of those questions. What if my spouse is a non-believer? What if, you know, I want out of marriage? There's people in society that are saying, in the Christian society even, they're saying, oh, it's most spiritual to be single. Those are the hard, difficult questions. And then the social issues went beyond married and single issues. It also began to involve race. The Jews in that particular day, in that particular time, of course, when a Jew was born, usually on the eighth day, they would be circumcised. And that was norm within the Jewish society. But we're talking about the Roman world now. We're talking about the Greek culture now. We're talking about, you know, incredible challenges for a Jew. A Jew that's been circumcised his whole life now grows up in a society where they look down on that. You had within the Roman world open bathhouses. You bathed publicly. It was a normal thing. When you went to exercise, it was without clothes. Even in the Greek games and the competition, the Olympics and whatnot that we are even watching right now. Of course, we're clothed today, but back then when they had those kind of competitions, they would not be clothed. And so the Greek culture looked down on those that were circumcised as being less. And so what had happened was the social pressures began to be so much on some of the Jews that they would actually become uncircumcised. They had a surgical procedure back then. And it was so common within the Jewish community that some of the rabbis wrote against that. Then you had, of course, the individuals who were Gentiles in the church. And the Gentiles, of course, would be saved. And then there were these, you know, guys that would come along and called the Judaizers. They would creep into the church and they would tell the Gentiles, well, listen, if you believe in Jesus Christ, that's great. And obviously, you know, you're saved and whatnot. But if you really want to be right with God, if you want to be complete in your salvation, then you need to be circumcised. So there was all these social positions, these positions within society on the area of circumcision. Well, now bring that into the church. I'm saved. I'm born again. What should I do? I know the social pressure. I know what society is saying. But what is God saying? So Paul, in those verses 17 through 27, says, listen, be content in the state that you are. Circumcision is nothing. Uncircumcision is nothing. That's not what it's about at all. What's important is obeying the commandments of God. What's so important is the mark of obedience unto God on your life. And then Paul would get into the topic of slaves. Slaves in those days, they, of course, were married through most part being that of arranged marriages. A slave would be, you know, told by his master who he would marry. And it wasn't uncommon for a slave to be pulled out of a marriage and placed in a barter type of position into another marriage, trading slaves by breaking up marriages and reuniting them with others. It was just the common practice within that environment of being a slave. But now you have the church. Now you have some slaves that were actually being saved. And all of a sudden, you know, the questions would arise. Now that I'm saved, should I still be a slave? Should I, you know, succumb to these pressures of the slave life? Should I accept that? Should I allow that? The challenge was on. Many of the slaves were simply rebelling against their masters because they wanted out of slavery. Paul says, listen, be content in whatever state you are in. Let each man, he would say in verse 22, remain with God in that condition in which he has called you. God allows us, Paul would be saying, to be in that state for a purpose. Conversion is not some sort of signal that a person is now to leave their social condition, you know, their marriage or their singleness or their human master or other circumstances. We are to remain with God in that condition until God moves us on. Paul says, in essence, contentment is more important. Contentment with God. Whether you're a Jew, a Gentile, a slave or free, neither state is spiritually better than the other. Remember, there was that teaching that crept into the church that was obviously wrong. Man, the single people, now those are the ones that really have it right with God. Oh, becoming a Jew, following the laws of the Jew. And that was just that teaching that came in. But here, Paul says that's not the case. Whether married or single, neither state is spiritually better than the other. The Roman Catholic idea that celibate priests and celibate nuns are more, you know, devout in God's eyes or more spiritual in God's eyes is contrary to this teaching. Being married or single has nothing in itself to do with spirituality. Being circumcised or uncircumcised has nothing to do itself with spirituality. Spirituality, again, is based on obedience to God. What matters is the keeping of His commandments, verse 19. We pick up in verse 29 where it says, but even if you do marry, that was verse 28. Verse 29, but this I say, brethren, that the time is short, so that from now on, even those who have wives should be as though they had none. Those who weep as though they did not weep. Those who rejoice, as though they did not rejoice. And those who buy, as though they did not possess. And those who use this world as not misusing it. For the form of this world is passing away. Now the focus on this particular place and point of this particular letter is really found at the latter part of verse 31, where it says, for the form of this world is passing away. That's what Paul is talking about in these particular verses. He wants you to understand within the context of marriage and singleness and living our lives down here in the state that we are, whether we're a Jew, Gentile, slave, or free. Hey, understand the form of this world is passing away. Then the Greek word for that is shema, not to be confused with the Hebrew word shema, but the Greek word shema. And it, of course, means the fashion or the manner of life, the way of doing things or the mode of existence. Now, again, you that might be new to Bible study around here, you say, why do you pull out the Greek? Why do you pull out a Greek word? Well, one of the reasons, of course, is that the New Testament was written in Greek. And so if you go back to some of the Greek words, the key Greek words, you realize that that language is much more rich. It's much more detailed. So as I study sometimes, I'll say, now, what does he mean by the form of the world? That could mean a lot of things in my English mind. Oh, I look to my concordance and I find that same word used in the Greek and I go, whoa, it means so much more. And in Paul's day, when he wrote that, it meant so much more to the Jewish mind, to the mind that was reading it in that day. Gentile mind, the Greek mind. Now, to help you understand that, we have, of course, the word love that we use in the English language. I say that I love my wife. I say that I love my grandmother. I say that I love a buddy of mine. He's a good friend. I say that I love food. I say that I love God. And I use the same word to describe my feelings and my actions towards those people, towards those things. But in the Greek world, in the Greek language, of course, you would use different words for each one of those particular settings. If I were to say that I loved my buddy, loved my friend, I would say, oh, man, I love them. I phileo them. That's a friendship love. If I were to say now I love my grandmother, a relative, I would say, oh, I stoge. I stoge my grandmother. And then to say that I loved my wife in a romantic way, I would use the word eros. But to say that I would love my wife as God would have me to love her, as it says in Ephesians chapter 5, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. That love is not an eros love. It's not a stoge love. It's not a phileo love. It is agape. And that is a sacrificial love. It is a love that acts irregardless of the response. It is a love that doesn't. It's the same word that is used for God so loved the world. God's love for us is agape. It's unconditional. It won't end. It can't be tapped out. It's inexhaustible. So when we go through our Bible studies and we pull out a particular key word, that's why I'm doing it, to bring the deeper meaning so we understand what it is that Paul, or the writer, of course, is best saying. So he's talking about the form of this world, the mode of this world, the manner in which we live our lives right down here. And he's saying that it is temporal. It is not permanent. Now, of course, he's in chapter 7, at the heart of this letter, of this chapter, he's talking about marriage. So how does that relate to marriage? Even though marriage is God-ordained and God-blessed, of course, understand, it is not an eternal relationship. From time to time, I'll have people come to me and say in the back, usually one spouse, usually not a couple, but one of them, will come up and say, now, Pastor Lance, am I going to be married in heaven? Is this relationship I have with my wife going to, you know, are we going to be married in heaven? And I always kind of scratch my head. Now, why are they asking this? Why is their spouse not here right now? But I find it fascinating that indeed the Bible teaches that marriage, of course, is a temporal relationship designed for this earth. It is not eternal. In Matthew chapter 22, the Sadducees had come to Jesus and they tried to kind of trap him from time to time. And they asked Jesus, you know, listen, what happens to a woman who marries seven times? In heaven, whose wife will she be? Now, that's a good question, is it not? In that day, of course, if you're married to an individual and he dies, ladies, this is the way it worked in that culture. So understand your freedom. But if you were married in that day and your husband died, guess what? His younger brother, if he had one and he was still available, becomes your husband. He now carries on the family name with you. Imagine that. So in light of that, well, imagine what that would be like if you had an older brother and he started to date someone. You think you might have a word or two to say about that? But they came to Jesus and said, now what if, you know, the first older brother died and then, you know, went down to the second, all the way down to the seventh. In heaven, Jesus, whose husband, whose wife, excuse me, would she be? I almost pictured that. Seven guys standing around saying, I've been waiting for you. She's mine. No, she's mine. I'm the older. I got her first. Yeah, but I was better. That's kind of the mindset. Jesus says, you guys, you are mistaken. You have no idea what you're talking about. In heaven, they neither marry nor are given in marriage, but are like the angels in heaven. No earthly marriages in heaven, no flesh in heaven will be in our glorified bodies. We will be the bride of Christ, you see. Sexual relations, reproduction, and childbirth have no place in heaven because there's no death. And there is no new life born. There's, you know, no need for marriage. Nor will there be any exclusive relationships in heaven because everyone is going to be perfectly united together in their relationship to God. Now, godly marriages are made in heaven, but they will not carry out into heaven. Marriage will disappear with this world because it is designed only for this world, not the next. So in light of that, Paul is saying in verse 29, time is short. The form of this world is definitely passing away, but time is short. Our time on earth is short. James 4, verse 14, life is as a vapor that appears for a little while, and then it vanishes away. Peter says in 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 24, all flesh is like grass, and all its glory like the flower of grass. The grass withers with time, and the flower fades away. Do you know there's a very different perspective from the person who knows they have limited time on this earth, about the earth, versus those who are living and have good health and think really they'll never get sick, think really they'll never really die. They just kind of have two different perspectives. Now, last week, with the consent of this individual to share this story that attends this church, I was called to a hospital scene of a young man that I know very well and has attended this place. I just dedicated his child, and he stood up here in front of his wife, his family, his friends, and said, hey, I'm a Christian, and I'm going to raise my child in the ways of the Lord. We've talked at the back door a whole lot. A man that was playing a game outwardly with God and with his family, but he was using drugs on a regular basis. He's 32 years old, and he had a very serious heart attack, and he doubled over in his house last week. And if his daughter didn't find him, he would not be on this earth right now. The call came in. Let me tell you the perspective that this young man had. Being on a floor with everybody that's getting ready to check out, they're in their 70s and 80s, and you're in your early 30s. Man, time is short. His view on life, radically different than those who think they've got this long lease on life. Man, his perspective towards drugs had changed. His perspective towards sin, towards God, towards his wife, towards this church. He looked at me in the eyes and he began to weep. And he says, God was convicting me week after week to stop playing this game. It was so clear. The messages were so clear. But I would not obey. And God allowed my ticker to stop so that I would look up. And I'm telling you what, I'm not stopping looking up. I'm done. I'm done running the game. I'm done playing the game. I'm going to walk with God. And man, that guy was in church like 3 days later. It really still hurts a whole lot, but I'm here, man. But time is short. And the perspective of those who see it that way, they look at life very, very different than those who don't. Because time is short, Paul would say to the married people in verse 29, husbands and wives, man, you're to live as though you had none. Whoa, what does that mean? Well, understand, Paul is not teaching that marriage is no longer binding to believers. He is not teaching that they are to lighten their marital responsibilities. For you note takers, Paul is teaching that marriage should not reduce a Christian's obligation and devotion to the Lord and His work. That's what he's teaching. The responsibilities of marriage are no excuse for slacking in the Lord's work. Do not let your marriage hold you back because time is short from God's work. A godly marriage should become more effective in pleasing the Lord by serving the Lord. You're a teen now. I remember in my marriage counseling settings, I vaguely remember a couple of things. But one thing I remember was I was very active in ministry. I was teaching. I had a surf shop Bible study that had grown. And there was a lot of responsibilities that I would call ministry. And I remember this man sitting down in front of me and Lori and saying, "Now, you're going to be married very soon, and there's going to be a lot of challenges. And one of the things you're going to have to deal with is your ministry. Things are going to change, Lance. Lori's needs are going to become priority and her demands." And I remember sitting there going, "Oh, wow, I didn't know that. I didn't see that. I've been dating this girl and I've been engaged to this girl. But, man, she's been right there with me in this Bible study and she's been right there with me in the ministry. I never saw marriage as something that would compete with God's work." Now, I've seen a lot of marriages. People get married, they fall in love, and they fall in love and get married, hopefully, that way. But they begin this you're going, "Ah." But love, marriage, babies, love, marriage, babies. And then all of a sudden, the marriage itself becomes more important than God. Their spouse, "Oh, man, I just love, you know, my spouse so much. We just look into each other's eyes all the time for the first month." And then, things change a little bit. But I've seen that. Where God becomes second. They're all excited about the love letters from each other, but they're not excited to read the love letter from God anymore. The Word. I look back on my 17 years of being married, 20 some odd years of knowing Lori, and I realize that there's never really been her competing with ministry. And I mean that. I say that in front of you and in front of her if she's here. She's never held me back, my marriage for that part. Yeah, there's responsibilities and there's all that comes with marriage and whatnot, and more freedom and liberty as a single person. But as an individual, I look at her and I realize that she has completed my life. She has become a team member, you see. And I think that's important to understand. I believe that is what Paul is saying here as well. Don't let your marriage hold you back from serving the Lord. Let it become a more effective tool in the hands of the Lord. Well, as I look back on my marriage, I think, well, how did this happen? No one trained us. No one taught us. They actually warned us. That was about it. But I realized that Lori and I, in the early days and even to these days, we're reading the same manual. We're reading the same blueprint, you see. Day in, day out, week in, week out. And what happens when you begin to read the same blueprint? You begin to build the same building. We're on the same page. We talk all the time about, you know, our relationships with God, about spiritual things, about ministry, about what we're learning. And the Lord was bringing us together over the years. And to this day, that's what we still do. Paul is saying again, don't let your marriage hold you back from the work that God has for you.
Well, today on Seeds of Commitment, Lance Cook has been offering us a clear balance in the Word of God, especially on marital issues in 1 Corinthians 7. On the greater responsibility that married people have, and as well as the distractions that we can have when we're married, especially on earthly matters and domestic issues, and how our priority, whether we're married or not, needs to be on Jesus Christ. We trust that you have benefited from today's broadcast on Seeds of Commitment. Now, if you'd like to receive this study in its entirety, either on audio cassette or compact disc, make sure you mention tape number 4602-21. That's 4602-21. And simply call us here at Seeds of Commitment at 714-441-2845. We accept Visa, MasterCard, and Discover Card. Again, simply call us at 714-441-2845. If you'd like to write a letter to us, your comments, and as well as send us a check of today's study, simply write to Seeds of Commitment, 1370 South Euclid Street, La Habra, California, 90631. That's 1370 South Euclid Street, La Habra, California, 90631. To get all this contact information about our ministries and as well as Seeds of Commitment. To know more about our ministry, simply go to our website. The address is www.seedsofcommitment.org. That's www.seedsofcommitment.org. And then make it a point to join us for our next study right here on Seeds of Commitment as Lance Cook continues his studies in 1 Corinthians. Until then, may God bless you as you stay committed to the Word of God.